This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey y'all, this is Josiah Gray, and this is Half Street High Heat. Hope you enjoy today's episode.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to another episode of Half Street High Heat, the first episode that officially is in the 2023 regular season. I am Nick. You can follow me on Twitter at the Coach Moose. I am joined by my, you see, I was going to take Amanda's thing where I used a fancy word, but I'm just going to say my co-hosts and you guys can fill in the blank. My co-hosts, Amanda and Ryan, you can follow them on Twitter at awhite7877 and at WeAreAllShaq. And of course, follow the show at Half Street High Heat. I apologize for not coming prepared with a superb adjective for you guys, but I do appreciate you. What's going on?
Not too much. Had some actual baseball to watch. It was, not always pretty, but I'll take it. It's always better to have baseball than to not have baseball. So
yeah,
happy to have the season underway.
It was more not pretty than it was pretty. We're recording this on Monday night after the game. So 4 games under the belt, and I've enjoyed about 5 1/3 of them quick math 36 innings that we've had. Yeah. Enjoyed about 5 1/3, but we'll get to that later. Ryan, what's going on?
You know, just enjoying baseball. Great sports time right now. Baseball's back. The women national championship was absolutely electric.
Yep.
Great tournament. Men's
horrible
tournament.
Officiating.
We got Augusta coming on. Ooh, egregious officiating. Men's tournament's on right now. Augusta this weekend. The weather's good. Very, very underrated time of the year, man. Life's okay. Only okay because our team stinks. But sports are back.
Yeah. I'm trying to just, you know, it's funny actually watching these games with absolutely, we've said it the last couple seasons, like, oh, no expectations baseball. But it hasn't, I don't know. To me, this season feels different. Like my expectations are even, like they couldn't get any lower. So watching the games when they're losing, it doesn't even bother me. I'm just like, well, yeah, of course they're losing. I expect them to lose. So it's a little bit easier for me to take. And I don't know what it is that makes this one different, except perhaps I finally, like I had the most pessimistic of our entire team of everyone at Half Street High Heat expectations for the year. So that's the key to happiness, low expectations, I guess. But
yeah, like I found myself in a kind of not awkward, but certainly a different situation for me personally as a fan this year where I know this team stinks. I know it, and I'm not trying to convince myself or anyone else otherwise, but I am trying to like reshape the way my mindset on this team. And I'm trying to be neutral, just like call out the good shit when it happens, call out the bad shit when it happens. Like when I'm live tweeting from District on Deck or anything else, like I'll, good plays, I'll tweet about it. Bad plays, bad situations, which obviously there's more of right now, I'll tweet about it. And I'm trying to like not play both sides, but again, be as neutral as possible. And I know
like I don't feel the irritation. I think that's the difference. Like normally I'd get pissed.
Oh, I do.
And feel the irritation. And I don't know. For me, it's just kind of like, yeah, whatever. I mean, it is what it is. But I actually am a little bummed I didn't get to watch the game on yesterday's game, which was the only decent one.
The only decent one, right?
I was at the Caps game, which was not decent at all.
Yeah, it was also like very irritating. Which most Caps games have been this year. But like my irritation doesn't come from the players. It comes from Davey Martinez. And I will save that rant. Yeah, I will. Yes, exactly. I will save that rant. We're bringing back the good, the bad, and the ugly today, which is obviously a recurring segment for any of our longtime listeners. We'll talk about all of that stuff over the past four Nats games as we, you know, trudge through tonight's episode and the four games that the Nats have played thus far. Is that a word, trudge?
It is, which is a great, I just love the idea, like as we trudge through the episode. Thank you for trudging with us, yeah. All of you who are listening. We appreciate you.
Yeah, half street, trudge street.
There you
trudge
go.
Heat, trudge heat, trudge. Yeah. Trudge. Workshopping it. But as Ryan alluded to, sports are back, but that's not the only thing that's back.
Yes.
The week in review is also back.
And the crowd goes wild.
Ryan, take it away.
Did you miss it?
Yes.
That's what we like to hear. Thank you, Amanda. Baseball is back. The first four games of the MLB season came, and it was the first four we saw with the new rule changes. And I got to say, baseball's back, baby. The rule changes are fantastic. The average time of game this weekend was 2 hours and 41 minutes. Wow. Offense was up. The league-wide slash line was up by 15 points or more for batting average, on base, and slugging. Stolen bases are back. 70 stolen bases on 84 attempts. There was less than one pitch clock violation per game. League BABIP is .310, and we're seeing singles again. Baseball is back. Anthony Rendon, you guys know him? Former National. Well, he suspended 5 games. He swung at a fan. Rendon did not make contact with his swing, something Angels fans are very familiar with. Adam Duvall, who I wanted the Nationals to sign, made history in his first weekend as a Red Sox. He was the only player in MLB history to have a double, a triple, and a walk-off home run with 5-plus RBIs in the same game. Adley Rutschman was the first catcher in MLB history with 5 hits on opening day, and he's the first player ever to go 5-for-5 with 4 RBIs or better on opening day. Dodgers are a wagon. Trace Thompson, 3 home runs, 8 RBIs in his season debut. All 3 home runs were hit 107.5 miles per hour. We are living in the Matrix. To the NL East, in last place, are the only winless team in the league. The Philadelphia Phillies, sitting at 0-4. Their season's off to a dreadful start, as bad as you can get. The offense is good. They're 7th in the league in WRC+, but they allowed 27 runs in the first 2 games of the season. Wheeler and Nola started those. That is the most runs given up to start a season for the Phillies since 1895. It gets better. They're playing the Yankees right now, and they got absolutely blown out in the first game of the season. In 4th place are the 1-3 Marlins. They dropped 3-4 to the Mets, and they're trying to mask the bad roster construction by putting Jazz Chisholm in center field. It didn't go very well. A lot of growing pains out there for him. Jazz missed quite a lot of the balls in center field. They play the Twins up next. In 3rd place are your Washington Nationals. More on them in a second. In 2nd place are the 2-1, soon to be 3-1 Braves. They took 2-3 from the Nats. They didn't look good this weekend. They did not play good ball. Max Fried got hurt. They didn't play good defense. Bad with runners in scoring position. And that series was rather easy for them. They're playing the Cardinals right now, and that first game is rather easy for them as they're winning 8-3 right now as they finish up their 3-game set with the Cardinals this week. In 1st are the now 3-2 Mets. They're 3-1 when I wrote this. No keeping up with the Mets this week. Nothing too crazy happened, although Justin Verlander did pull his armpit about 10 minutes before opening day, so that's kind of funny. They did make quick work of Miami. They immediately got blown out in Milwaukee, losing 10-0. Kode Senga makes his long-awaited debut, and he did not disappoint. He went 5.1 innings, striking out 8, and gave up 1 earned run. The Mets, despite the game today, look like they're going to be another problem in the NL East. This has been your first week in review of many of the 2023 season.
Nice. I have to say, I think the Phillies and CJ Abrams are colluding to disprove all of my wilder predictions in our last episode.
Well, it's only been 1.8% of the season.
Yes, so I'll withhold judgment, but I will say, I think it's a little early to judge the Phillies, but I would love nothing more than for the Phillies to completely suck, despite my preseason predictions. I loathe them and wish only bad things to happen to them.
They have too many of my favorite players now. Like, it's hard to root against them.
I can still do it. It's all about the name on the front of the jersey, Nick, not on the back.
They've colluded against me and are recruiting my favorite players.
I know. Trey Turner being a Philly is like, it causes me almost physical pain.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. And they have Ryan's favorite player, Kyle Schwarber, as well. So, yeah. My like initial takeaway, and I love that you started with it, Ryan, is all the rule changes. And yeah, it's been, you know, at the time of the data collection, only 3 games or 4 days of the season, however you want to frame it. But the rule changes have been awesome. Offense up and time of game down. Like, that's the best case scenario. And not to mention all of the stolen bases, like that, you know, Amanda, you've been a large proponent of this, but that brings strategy back into the game. Like, that's introducing a ton of strategy that was not there almost at all. It was almost impossible to steal a base, like, unless you have otherworldly speed, which some of these guys do. But now you're seeing hit and runs. You're seeing guys just like swipe bases.
A lot of small ball, because a lot of singles. And with a lot of singles, you got a lot more strategy trying to get those runs in.
Cool. And that's what a majority of the offensive slash line improvement has come from. It has been off singles, but you're getting guys that are just savvy ball players. So they'll force a pitcher to throw over. I think it's like the max of 3 times or whatever it is, and step off once or whatever the exact rule is. I forget, you know, while we're recording this, but they'll max a pitcher out on throw over attempts and then just have a free bag to steal. Like, it's really cool to see, you know, the gamesmanship go on. And obviously it goes both ways with the pitch clock. You know, you see Mackenzie Gore, who we'll talk about in a little bit, you know, he was ready to go 2 minutes before, you know, the game was even slated to start, and he had really nice pace, especially through his first inning. And maybe it was just like a lot of anxiety and buildup for the moment, but like, he had really nice pace, like was not letting the hitters get comfortable in the box as he was going at them with, you know, 94, 95 on his fastball. Like, it was really cool to see. And obviously it's not just him, you know, it's been pitchers. We saw Max in spring training against the Nats of all teams, like him trying to work the pitch clock to his advantage. So it's been really cool to see the players adjust to the rule changes, but it is nice to know that the rule changes as a whole have been working so well, you know, so far throughout the season.
I do have a quick question I'd love to get thoughts from the two of you on. Is, I've heard lots of talk on, you know, MLB Network Radio and other talk shows, and just seen a lot of, you know, articles written about these rule changes. And I like the way the game, the pacing of the game is certainly improved, especially as a television product. 2.5 hours, 2 hours and 45 minutes, somewhere in that range, is just so much more palatable when you're watching it on TV. But I've heard a lot of people saying, you know, you get up, it's moving so fast now that if you're at the stadium and you get up to go to the bathroom and get a beer and you wait in line and you come back and you miss 3 innings. And I wonder about how many people at the games themselves might stop getting up and going to go do things as much because they miss too much of the game, and how that might affect the owners as far as concession sales. You know, shorter games, maybe people getting up less frequently because they don't want to miss too much of the game. I mean, you can miss a third of the game on one trip, you know what I mean? So I just wonder if this shows up as big decreases in merch sales and concession sales and stuff, if any of these changes might be tweaked or done away with. Or I even heard somebody suggest maybe they should open the stadium up an hour earlier than they do. Like, I think at the Nats, it's 90 minutes. You know, maybe it could be 2.5 hours instead of an hour and a half, you know, let people get in and watch BP and spend some money. So I don't know. It was just an interesting thing. You know, the owners are always about the bottom line. And while this is better for the TV audiences, it seems like it could be detrimental to the money that they're going to make in stadium.
Boo. Who?
I knew we're right.
I'm not feeling sorry for them. I'm simply asking, is that going to lead to some of these changes either being rolled back or changed in some way? I'm just curious, because with the owners about the money. So what if this is a big, you know, what if this causes a big, huge crash in stadium revenue? Is that going to make, are they going to keep these changes in place?
Well, one, moment of silence for the absolute poor billionaires. My hearts really go out for them, especially the learners who only worth $6.3 billion. Really, really terrible for them. Couple thoughts on that. Good, I'm glad, because it's so freaking annoying when people get up, like, in the middle of an at-bat. Two, beer vendors come around, stay in your seat. Three.
Yeah, but what about food vendors? Couldn't they send more food vendors around?
Oh, eat before you go. Like, that's not, it's not my problem.
That's, if you go with kids, that's not the way it works.
Well, I don't have any, so that's not my problem. But no, they're not going to, because it truly doesn't matter what happens in the game, because the way the national TV contracts are and the way revenue sharing is, they're making money regardless. It doesn't really care. I've saw people are so dramatic. They're like, oh man, I went up, I missed two innings. That was the only game of the year people are going to be at. It's the fourth game of the year, and that's had 10,000 people at. Like, you can go get a beer, get a hot dog, get whatever you want, and you'll probably miss three pitches at a Nats game.
At
a Nats game, that's probably true.
Yeah, to Ryan's point, like, I don't think it's much of an issue now, but there are several ways you can kind of combat this without rolling back the rule changes. The first thing that comes to my head is the QR codes. The Nats already have a system like that. Granted, it's for the PNC Diamond Club or whatever behind home plate, like those sections. But you have a QR code, you place your order on your phone, and someone comes and delivers it to you. Like, that's the
first. That granted, kind of thing is the answer for sure. But yeah, like I said, with kids, like, granted, if they want a hot dog and I have to pee and I have to, you know, I want popcorn and can I have ice cream? And I just feel like, and you don't see a lot of people out walking. Like, you see beer vendors, but you don't really see a lot of food vendors.
No, I know. But like, I was getting to that. Like, I think to do something like that, you have to have more vendors. So hopefully the answer to this in like a ideal world is not to, oh, this is hurting our bottom dollar, like, let's roll it back so we make more money. Hopefully it's like, all right, we got to, you know, spend money to make money, so to speak, and hire more vendors and make the system a little bit more efficient, especially for, because obviously it's not a Nats problem right now with the lack of attendance, but you know, the Yankees, the Dodgers, all those teams with competitive products on the field, like, they're going to want to keep the fans engaged and, you know, be able to provide the fans, you know, with everything they want, but also encourage the fans to spend money. So I think there will be kind of natural responses to that, not just undoing what has clearly worked for the actual on-field product. They'll adapt the fan aspect of the rule changes as we go along.
Yeah, I think you're probably right about that. I think they're going to have to do something to address it in stadium, but I don't think they'll roll the rules back. And I'm surprised how much I enjoy the rule changes. You know, I'm usually the Luddite, you know, like, I don't like to see anything change, but the faster games are great. I mean, it is great. I love baseball. I mean, all of us, obviously, we have a baseball podcast. All the people listening to this are obviously pretty good baseball fans. They're listening to baseball podcasts. But even for somebody who likes baseball as much as me, like, 3.5-4 hour games, that's hard to sit in stadium or on TV. I mean, they needed something, and this is definitely working. And I actually really like seeing how quickly it's moving and how it's introducing this whole new aspect. I really do. I know it's a moot point because the DH is here to stay and National League Baseball is no more, but I miss some of the gamesmanship and the strategy of that. And I think, Nick, to your point that you made earlier, that this does reintroduce a lot of that, not just the pitch clock, but, you know, some of the other rule changes, the bigger bases, the step offs, the banning the shift. There's a lot of things that are making it more fun, really, than I think it was last season.
Yeah, agreed. The last point to the concession aspect of all it, like, I saw it, I went to the first Caps game of the year a couple weeks ago on the OV bobblehead night, and then I saw the Nats have incorporated it as well. But the just like almost like not frozen food aisle, but the aisle of just beer that you can just go get from the fridge, and it's like a self-checkout operation. You just have a couple of ushers there just monitoring, so no one just, you know, takes a beer and run type thing. But like, those are really quick for speeding up lines too. And I saw it wasn't, you know, for every stand, because obviously the specialty food items, like, or food concessions, like, you're not gonna be able to do that. But, you know, they just load up the little hot bar with, you know, your chicken tenders and fries or your Italian sausages or whatever. You just grab, pay, and go. And that helps speed up the lines too, as opposed to, oh, get up there, order, wait for your food, pay, oh, forgot this, gotta go back. Like, yeah, you know, that's just a long drudged out process. But this helps a little bit, and I think you'll see more of an expedited process as we go through, but we'll see. All right, let's get into the actual baseball aspect of all this and get into our good, the bad, and the ugly segment. For those that are new to the show, first of all, we appreciate you joining us, but the good, the bad, and ugly is as it sounds. We talk about the good things that happened since our last episode and during these Nats games, talk about the bad things and of course the ugly things. And with the state of the team, obviously there's more bad and ugly than good, but we'll try to balance it out as well. So let's start with the good. Let's start on a positive note. Mackenzie Gore. I want to start there. Obviously, there's a couple of different aspects we'll talk about, but Mackenzie Gore was almost like through one start. It's very early in the season, but like the prince that was promised. Like it was such a welcome sight after the first two games of the season going the way they did, especially with our starters. Mackenzie Gore, I don't even think he had his best stuff. I just think his stuff was that good. His fastball averaged 94.7. It got up to 96.5. He mixed his slider and curveball well. And really he just relied heavily on his fastball. I believe he threw 60, like 70. I think he actually might have thrown like close to 90 pitches and 60 of them were fastball, something like that. Like, so he relied on his fastball heavily and he just throws a four seamer. So it's not like he was relying on a sinker to induce ground balls or anything like that. He just has a really good fastball. He struggled with command a little bit, which was his kind of bugaboo throughout the minors. But, you know, if the result is 5 1/3, 3 hits, 1 run, I mean, shoot, if you're going to walk a couple of guys here and there, like I can live with that. Granted, you know, you want to see the walks come down. His whip was still 1.3, but again, you can't argue with the result and you certainly see the potential that he has. So he's by far and away the good story of the weekend.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. I also loved his attitude. He was just like super amped up and ready to start before it was game time. And you know, when he did get pulled and Hunter Harvey came in, he was still just like super engaged and cheering from the dugout. And I don't know, like the whole thing. I love this kid. He had a great outing. Obviously it's one outing. You can't read too much into it, but he was terrific.
I will.
And yeah, I know. Well, we got to take the good, right? Take the good. And yeah, he was, you know, Prince who was promised. I might have to get through like three starts before I'm on that train, but yeah, he was definitely the bright spot amongst the starting rotation so far.
Yep. 63.4% of the time. So Amanda, you're right. That's how much he threw the fastball. Ryan, what are your thoughts on Mackenzie Gore?
Yeah, I mean, Gore looked good. It's the stuff is there, which is the most exciting takeaway. A lot of what he looked like is what we've seen from him in the past. He has a time to get wild and lose the strike zone. 4 walks as evident by that. But when he's in the strike zone, his stuff is good. The stuff is there. It's going to be up to the Nats to be able to take him to that next level. But this was, you know, almost as great of a start as you could have wanted. All of his secondary velocities was up. Not the biggest fan of his slider. I feel like it's more of a gyro cutter. I think he throws it a little too hard and he doesn't have enough velocity in his fastball. But we'll talk about that in a little. His fastball is good. He gets great movement on his fastball. It's fun to watch, and he can locate it really, really well. That's fantastic. That should bring him a lot of success. The slider is going to need to be a little bit tweaked, and that is going to be the key for him going to that next level, because if he ever does lose a little bit of velocity on his fastball in some starts, having that slider to help break things up will be really good. Right now, his slider is averaging 90, a little over 89. His fastball is averaging 94. That can create a little inconsistencies from innings to inning. But the most important stat is he had 32% CSW, which very, very great to see, because he faced a very good lineup in the Braves and the stuff's there. Homie just needs a little bit of tweaking. I'm very excited about him. He was the guy I was most excited coming into the year, and my excitement is only at that level or more so after his first start.
Yeah, and I think to your point about throwing his slider like a gyro cutter type thing, for anyone who doesn't know, a gyro is kind of like horizontal spin. I think Franny said it. I was trying to remember when he said it, but I think Franny said it on the broadcast. Like some of his sliders, he was throwing through the break, where basically you're just throwing it too hard. You're not like trying to go with the pitch, or you know, you're because a slider and basically all off speed is a feel pitch. It's not a power pitch like a fastball. So that's why it's crazy to see someone like a Jacob deGrom throw a mid-90s slider, because that's just not normal. And obviously Jacob deGrom's kind of one of one. Only so many people can do that. But typically a slider is a feel pitch, and you kind of have to, you know, have a reference point for the break and all that stuff. And at times Mackenzie Gore was throwing through the break or just not really having a feel for it. But the encouraging thing, you know, the underlying, maybe overlying, whatever thing about his pitches is he had six strikeouts. Two came on the fastball, two came on the slider, and two came on the curveball, which I just thought was interesting. Like he didn't really have a put away pitch.
Yeah,
And
but
that
it's
goes to
nice to
my
be able to throw all of them to get them out when you need
right.
to.
And that like kind of goes to my point earlier. Like I don't even think he had his best stuff, and he still had to start like this. So imagine once he does have a good slider day or a good curveball day or whatever, like what the results could potentially look like. And will every start look like this? No. But it was nice to see in his first start with the Nats, him put out a performance like this to build good faith, so to speak. And you know, certainly super encouraging going forward. So can't wait for his next start. I don't know who we play this weekend, but yeah, he won't face the Rays. He'll face the next team that I think it'll be our first road trip of the year. All right, let's move on to the next good thing. K-Bear Ruiz certainly had eyes on him after signing the extension he did this offseason, had the first home run of the Nats season, an absolute no doubt
Yes,
moonshot that
third deck
was
tank.
awesome. It somehow only went 407 feet. It felt like it went 500, and just maybe that's because it went to the third deck. It felt like it should have been so much farther. But it was awesome. Granted, it was the only run of the game and it came in the ninth inning. But hey, you know, we'll take our wins when we can get them. The other thing I really liked, and he had a couple other hits. I think he's batting over 300 or right around there. He had, I think, an 0 for 3 day tonight. So might have dropped a little bit. But the other thing I really liked was in the Mackenzie Gore start. Mackenzie Gore had walked Ronald Acuna. I believe it was like the fifth inning, walked Ronald Acuna and fell behind 2-0 to Matt Olson. And his two pitches to Matt Olson were outside fastballs and not really close. He was like yanking the fastball. So just wasn't really a competitive pitch and pretty easy take for Olson. Ruiz had repeatedly through the Acuna at bat and through the Olson at bat had kind of gestured to him saying like, calm down, calm down. And after the second missed fastball to Olson, Ruiz called time and went out there and visited with Mackenzie Gore, which seems like such a small thing. I know casual fans be like, oh, well, that's what a catcher's supposed to do. Da, 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 da. Ruiz is still young too. Like he's not a vet. He's still learning and obviously building rapport with Mackenzie Gore. Like this is their first time really working together in a huge capacity so far while they've been teammates. So for Ruiz to kind of identify that situation, go out there, calm Mackenzie Gore down. Really loved that from Ruiz. Like just a nice all around like performance from him through four games. Yeah, he's been great offensively, but it's nice to know, even though he hasn't thrown out a runner yet or anything like that, his situational awareness is there. And how did Mackenzie Gore respond? Fastball, 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 strike, comes back and strikes out Matt Olson. And like that's obviously on Mackenzie Gore to throw the pitches, but Ruiz was the catalyst there to make it happen. So that's just one thing I really liked, one small moment through these, what I say it was 36 innings that the Nats have played so far, that was really cool to see, you know, Ruiz kind of step up in the moment and help out Mackenzie Gore.
There was a lot of encouraging signs from Ruiz this weekend, which I was very, very excited about. Again, I absolutely love this stuff because, yes, it is a small sample size, but there is takeaways you can take from it. Ruiz last year, his swing decisions were atrocious. He isn't the only one. It's kind of the whole roster. He made a lot of weird swing decisions. He didn't strike out a lot, and he didn't walk a lot. when you're in his power, simply disappeared. When you want to translate the power back, cut back on your swing decisions. Yes, you're going to strike out more, but you're going to turn it into power. What did he do this weekend? He didn't chase as much, which made me very, very excited. His chase percentage over this weekend was 30% lower than was last week, last year. Yes, that's only three games, but it was against rather good pitching, who is living and dying, getting people chasing all over the league, and he wasn't chasing. That made me very, very excited. What did him decreasing his chase rate lead to? He had an average exit velocity of 94.5 from this weekend. He had a 16-degree launch angle, which is higher than the league average, which is 12%. His sweet spot percentage for the weekend was 44% around the league. That for the start of the season, it was at 33%. You see what I'm saying? Like, his barrel percentage over the weekend was 11%. The league average barrel percentage over the weekend was 6%. He stopped chasing and he started hitting the ball harder this weekend, which was great. Also, a very, very important thing, his home run. Not because he hit it, but because where the pitch was. It was a fastball up and in. And last year, pitches up and in were a dead zone. He was egregious on pitches up and in. And last year, he only hit one home run on pitches up and in. He already matched that on the second or third game of the year. So that's rather important for Ruiz's bat to develop, is if he can consistently turn on those pitches up and in. Not every single one of them has to be a home run, but when guys break out, a lot of the improvements that they make are with smarter swing decisions and be able to hit fastballs up and in. If he can continue those, we will finally see the breakthrough with Ruiz with the bat that he did in the minors, and that would be so, so crucial for this franchise.
Yeah, those are excellent points. I love the stats. And he's one of those guys to me that was like, it's when you just see the eyeball test, he just feels like he's ripe for that breakout. You know what I mean? He is so young still, 20, 24, 23. Did he turn 24? I think he's 24 now.
I believe he's 24.
Yeah. But I mean, he had that one game on, that was Saturday's game where he hit that monster home run. And, but he had two hits that day. And, you know, I don't know, it's hard. Any of the stats you normally look at for guys, it's too early in the season for some of these. But when you look at RBIs and runs scored and that sort of thing, like, this team's going to be so bad that you're going to have to look at more individual stuff. But the seeing the development in his swing, and, you know, he did so well in the minors, but, you know, being at this level, facing the level of pitching that he is here, you know, in the majors, I think it's just been an adjustment period. And I think some fans have been a little bit too quick to, I mean, lots of fans are, we're a reactionary bunch in general, to kind of say, you know, to judge him and make judgments about, oh, he's not going to be as good as we thought he was. But I think he can be every bit as good as we thought he was. He just needs that time to adjust. And we're already starting to see those adjustments this year. And, you know, if he can make those adjustments this year and next year while the team's not really trying to contend, it would be huge if he's ready to take that step and be that player that we expect him to be by what, the 2025 season, when it might matter again. 2025 might be a little optimistic, but when hopefully it will matter again.
Yeah. Hopefully being the operative word. It's doing a hell of a lot of work in that sentence.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Hopefully. Yeah, so super encouraging signs from Ruiz there. There's a couple other ones, but the last large good portion in the segment is the bullpen. And it seems so backwards, so asinine to even think about, let alone talk about in this actual segment. But it has been. I know Kyle Finnegan had his blow up opening day. And then, yeah, Thad Ward had, you know, a welcome to the MLB moment.
Big two-run shot.
Yeah, yeah. Matt Olson welcomed him there. I believe that was on Saturday, but he still managed to go two innings. Everyone has pitched at this point from the bullpen, some of them multiple innings. And we'll get into that in the ugly segment. I have one small note that really bothered me with that. But the bullpen has been pretty freaking good through 17 and two-thirds innings the first four games. They have a 3.14 ERA, and that includes the Kyle Finnegan blow up on opening day, and then obviously the Thad Ward two-run shot that I act like it was a blow up, but it was really just a one home run. 3.14 ERA for a bullpen is phenomenal, especially when you think about Corbin only lasting three innings. Josiah Gray only lasting
five innings. Well, they've pitched
Trevor Williams only lasting five innings. Like, they've done a really good job under the circumstances, but also like just in general, they've done a phenomenal job. And yeah, will they have a 3.14 ERA throughout the entire season? No, but like they can be very good, and they are proving themselves through four games to be pretty deep. You have several guys, I think Ramirez, Thompson, Ward, there's one other one, have all gone multiple innings, which is like cool to see. Yeah. Thompson, Ramirez, Ward.
Oh yeah. Was it Harvey? I was trying to think who the other one was.
Harvey didn't. I think Harris might have. I don't remember. But yeah, I think four different guys have gone multiple innings, which is probably going to be necessary with this pitching staff, and especially some of these people on the pitching staff. But I've been super impressed by the bullpen. Mason Thompson has looked excellent, and Ryan, your guy Hunter Harvey has also looked excellent too. So good call by us.
Great call by us. Hunter Harvey was my breakout pitcher this year. His fastball, as I know in the Half Street High Heat preview episode, I talked about his fastball. His fastball looks good. It's ninth in stuff plus right now amongst relievers. His fastball is legit. And it's so funny because, yes, this is all incredibly small sample sizes, but it's still fun to talk about. It's still,
but we got to talk about something.
Right. But like, this team probably wins another World Series if they had this bullpen when they were good.
Yep.
It's like, this bullpen's kind of good. And it's so funny because now they have a good bullpen when it doesn't really matter. But there's a lot of really, really exciting arms in this bullpen, which I'm excited about. Really, really excited to see Hunter Harvey keep pitching. Not really sure why Mason Thompson with three innings today.
That was kind of weird.
Oh, we're going to talk about it. We're going to talk about it. Don't worry.
No, I saw Nick tweeting from the District on Deck account. He was salty.
I'm livid, but continue, Ryan. Sorry.
I'm going to be honest. I was kind of just wrapping up. So you guys are good. Amanda, you guys.
Yeah. So, the bullpen has been, I won't even say it's a nice surprise because it's not really surprising. I mean, we expected them to be good. It is a little bit, ironic that we have this bullpen that I remember when the Nats were in 2019 when they won it all. And even, the next year before it all got blown up, it was like if they could have just had even like a league average bullpen, imagine what could have happened in those few years where I think it was 18 that they missed. The playoffs, I can't remember, 17.
Yes.
Anyway, I just keep thinking back to those years. Like, imagine if you had not even just league average would have been such an improvement. And this bullpen would have, it could have been a very different contention window. But I suppose that's neither here nor there at this point. They're good. Thompson going three innings was inexplicable. And I don't like this thing. Davey seems to be on this. I'm going to try to use people in multiple innings as much as I can. I don't know. I don't know what this is that we're doing here, but right now, there's been 36 total innings played and the bullpen has pitched half of them and that's not ideal, but I think he needs to slow his roll a little bit because the last thing we want is to, and we need the starters to go deeper, obviously. And that should happen hopefully as they get a little bit more stretched out and they're not named Corbin, but I don't know. You can't have your bullpen throwing half your innings. And I'm not liking this trying to use, fewer guys for multiple innings. I feel like I know you want to save people for the next night, but I think you're going to wear out some arms pretty quickly with this type of strategy.
Yeah, that's certainly the counterpoint to it. It's just nice to know they could go multiple innings. I'm not certainly not advocating for it. Some of these decisions are just
the three crazy. Innings one tonight was like really
we'll save that because that's certainly coming up. All right, let's move on to the bad section, and we just have one thing to talk about in the bad section. Really, the bad section is kind of a negative connotation, but it's something that's bad that could be fixed, whereas it's not something that's like a prevalent recurring issue. That's generally what we tried to save the ugly portion of the segment for. The bad this week is CJ Abrams. And that's not to say we've given up on CJ Abrams. I personally am of the mindset that there are a ton of, underlying metrics or factors that say CJ Abrams will be just fine. I think it can really just be explained by the fact that he's 22 and was probably rushed to the majors due to initially the Fernando Tatis injury. But I also think he was rushed to the Nats because of the trade, if we're being completely honest, because he was really the only one available after the Juan Soto trade, with Mackenzie Gore being the only other MLB ready prospect and him being injured. I think the Nats wanted to have something immediate to show fans that, hey, we traded Juan Soto, but like they tried to do a sign of good faith thing, and CJ Abrams really just wasn't ready. And I think we're kind of seeing the results of that, and you can't really blame him because he's 22. Like what 22-year-old is on average, what 22-year-old is ready for the majors? Not many. Like not everyone can be Juan Soto or Bryce Harper or any of the other prospects we've had come up. So I think it's more just a case of fans being a little bit spoiled with some of the prospects that have come up through the Nat system and been like immediate superstars. But he, at the same time, he has been bad. He reached base for the first time tonight in his 10th plate appearance for the season. He got the day off yesterday, which I didn't like either, but it is what it is. And it was a walk. It was a well-earned walk. He was down 0-2, ended up seeing 10 pitches and working a walk. But 0-for-10 is 0-for-10. Like, you can't really defend that too much. He's had some hard hit balls, which I like, but again, an outs and out. And then defensively, he's been okay since, but opening day was rough. Three errors. There's really like, again, an error is an error. Like you got to look at the bottom line. I will say in his defense, if we're looking at potential, solutions to this issue, I think it was just jitters, opening day jitters. It's his first opening day. And again, he's 22, but also it was more mental mistakes, which is just like coaching and just experience. Like that's going to help him. Like he's still super inexperienced. He's only played in like 92 career games. Like that's nothing. He hasn't even played a full season yet. So we got to be really patient with him. There's going to be a lot of growing pains. And his three errors, one was a double play ball, Taylor made, and he just looked up too quick. He was trying to give the feed to Garcia too quick, and he bobbled it. And it sucks, led to a run, but you kind of understand because he's just trying to make a play. The second one, you had Orlando Arcia for the Braves, speedy guy, hit a chopper to to Abrams. He throws it to first, rushes the throw, ends up pulling Dom Smith off the bag, and Arcia is safe. The third one was a base hit to right field, or maybe it was a sac fly. Runner tagging up, going to third, relay to Abrams. He just rushes the throw, bounces by Candelario into the dugout, and scores the run. So, yes, three errors look bad, but if you kind of look at the plays themselves, it's not just like he took his time and made a bad throw. It's not like he was just a complete lapse of judgment. He's just working a little too quickly, so hopefully with more experience, with hopefully better coaching, he settles down and rebounds a little bit. But I certainly haven't given up on Abrams yet, but I do want to see something soon for sure.
Yeah. 11 plate appearances so far, obviously, with all of the caveats, it's an incredibly small sample size. But one thing that I've noticed is one thing that I had keyed on when I was looking at him as we were going to talk about him tonight was the number of pitches seen. 46 pitches is all over 11 plate appearances. Obviously that one walk tonight was 10 of those. So not great. His pitches seen per plate appearance is only 4.182, which is not good. I mean, as you said, a lot of this was jitters maybe for opening day, and a lot of people are focusing on the defensive errors, but offensively he hasn't looked great either. I think he's going to be fine. Obviously, if any of you who are listening now listen to our preview episode, I'm high on Abrams. I think he's going to have a good year. I think he's just young, and he's got a lot of, this is the age at which guys are working these issues out at double and triple A, and he's working these issues out at the major league level, which is tough for anybody. And it's hard to be in the spotlight, especially when you were part of such a huge trade and I imagine there's just a lot of pressure there. So I think he'll settle in, especially as you know, the bright lights of the beginning of the season fade, and you know, this team is not going to get a lot of attention. So he'll be able to just settle in and you know, get his work in, you know, work on the defense, on the defense and the offense, and just, you know, he's going to be fine. I'm not too concerned for him, but it was definitely not a good opening weekend for Abrams.
To say the least, kind of the worst possible start to a season he could have. I'm not very high on his bat. I wasn't very high on his bat coming into the season. Didn't think he'd be over 10, but like him slugging at the plate, sluggish at the plate, it's not very surprising. He did, however, have his first barrel as a National tonight, so he finally has one barrel. He went a while without getting a barrel, but we finally got one, baby. We're moving there.
Progress.
Absolutely. His strength is his speed and his defense. I think that is what he's going to be known for. But like, you're just gonna have to bear with it. It's growing pains. Shouldn't be making some of the mistakes we're seeing with him. And I do get a little when the ball is hit to him just because. Didn't have the best start to the season. He did struggle a little bit last year. But like Nick was saying, gotta have the patience, gotta have the growing pains with him. This team's gonna win 55 games. There's no better place for him to just stay up here and just work all this out. Maybe he'll have a commercial like Lucas Giolito day where they're like, Lucas Giolito, the worst pitcher in baseball. Like Lucas Giolito was able to do that because the White Sox were terrible and it didn't matter. It doesn't matter. Like, just be patient. The glove is going to continue to develop. I need to see a lot on that offensive side. We could talk about that a different time, but not worry about him defensively. He's young. These mental mistakes happen. Not really concerned defensively. You just got to be patient with the young guys.
For sure. And it's super, super small sample size. And actually, looking at Baseball Savant, it doesn't even include tonight's performance. But through his first few at bats, his launch angle has been much better than it was last year. He's not hitting the ball into the ground as much, which was just such a baffling thing that they tried to do last year with him. He might
I
have
had forgotten
actually,
about that or
yeah, he
blocked
might
it out
have
of my
actually
memory.
overcorrected a little bit, and he needs to focus on hitting more line drives than trying to elevate the ball. Because, like Ryan said, he's not really known for his bat, and he's not going to hit like 30 bombs or anything like that. But he needs to at least hit it over the infield. So, it's kind of a nice happy medium between last year and then the short sample size this year is probably where he wants to be. What'd you say, not Garcia, Ruiz's launch angle was 16%?
Yeah.
Yeah, Abrams is at a 26.5%, and he can't be doing that with the without the power behind it, and he doesn't have that, so he needs to focus on more line drives and stuff like that. Like, oh my, I'm not trying to get into too much of a tangent, but like, rather than hitting ground balls, why don't we just focus on line drives? Like, that achieves the same thing. Like, why like, why was hitting a ground balls ever a mindset? Just baffling to me. But let's get into it because that's actually a portion of the ugly segment. Actually, we're not going to start that. We're going to end the segment with the Davey Martinez and coaching staff aspect of it. We'll start with the topic that's uncomfortable for me to talk about. So I will hand it off to Ryan. Josiah Gray, unfortunately, lands in the ugly segment for us, and I'm just going to choose to abstain from this.
Yeah. So in our season preview, I said Gray needed to make a couple of improvements for him to be able to be a five. So that's how we were coming into the season. I was low on Gray. Last year was not very good. Gray had an issue walking guys, immediately giving up a home run. Going into the game, the wind was blowing out straight away center field. We knew it was going to be bad, and it was. The Braves started off season going, sorry, not season. They started off the game going back to back off Gray.
Which I
In
made
the
money on, at least. I just had to point that
exactly.
out
So
there.
that's a win, right? But there's a couple of things that are rather concerning. We saw for Gray in the first start of the year. Yes, I keep noting that this is small sample size because with stats, with data, small sample size is tricky, but you have to take this in consideration with the struggles we saw last year. Last year, Josiah Gray fastball was the worst pitch in baseball. That's not me being dramatic. It was a statistical fact. It was flat. In his start, his fastball averaged 13.75 IVB. Last year, he was a 17 IVB. His fastball got worse. His fastball was even flatter than it was last year, which is rather concerning because it was already very, very flat last year. And if it's even flatter, guys are going to tee off it even more than they did last year. So Gray had a very strong spring training. They talked about his cutter. So he threw it. He threw his cutter. It had 5 inches of arm side movement with 12 inches of vertical break, aka ride. It got obliterated. The Braves had a 98 mile per hour average exit velocity on his cutter. It's back to the drawing board on that thing. It wasn't moving as much as you want a cutter to move, and they're teeing off on it. So take that with the cutter that was bad, which was his big offseason improvement to help the fastball, but the fastball looked worse. We have an issue. And like, yes, this is only 4 games into the season. He's only made one start. But if that trend continues with him, it just baffles me how people are keeping their jobs. Because that's unacceptable. Like, that's a cataclysmic failure of this coaching staff to Gray if those trends continue for him this season. That's going to be something very interesting to monitor, because that first start, I got a lot of questions for his coaching staff, and I know they're not going to answer it because no one's actually going to ask.
First of all, how dare you?
Yeah, I got a question. First of all, how dare you?
Exactly. That would be the first one for the coaching staff. Yeah, this one's hard because, you know, when you see these guys come in these big trades, and you just and you know, in baseball, not all prospects hit. You know that percentage wise, a lot of them are not going to hit. But Gray was one where I just felt like when you make that trade, you have to get sure things. And I think cataclysmic is a little bit further than I'm willing to go right now. But Ryan, I think you're on the right track, is that if that fastball is getting worse instead of better, and that cutter, which was so hyped up, so talked about during spring training, which he hardly threw. That was really weird. And when he did throw it, it wasn't good. I don't know. I'm definitely on my concerned face for Josiah Gray.
And it sucks because, like, I like Gray. We had him on the pod. Mm-hmm. I was very high on him when he came here. But, like,
not the right spot for him, basically.
Not the right spot for him at all.
And if you need to be developed as a player, then
anywhere but here.
Literally, like, if he was on any other team, he's a three, but he's here. And, like, I don't even know if he could compete in the bullpen right now because he's a mess. And I saw something that made me laugh. The Rays took Zach Eflin's changeup and added more backspin to it. And his changeup is absolutely disgusting. They got his changeup to move the opposite way even more. We can't even grade to throw a fastball normally. Like, what is happening here?
Well, what's happening is we do not have the Rays player development staff. But it's just, not even close. And when you look at the, you know, like the kind of advanced metrics on Gray, like obviously there's one start is not enough to take much away from. But, you know, when you look the last 2 years, they haven't been good. And if you're not seeing improvement, which, you know, through one start, it certainly doesn't look like we're seeing much in the way of improvement. Like, it's, if he's like, can he even be a back of the rotation starter? I don't know. I mean, I'm trying to be, this is the ugly segment, so I suppose we can be a little bit more pessimistic. I'm trying not to be too much of a pessimist, but, you know, he's one of those guys where, by the end of last year, I started out very high on him. And by the end of last year, I could just feel feeling more deflated and more deflated as the season went on. Like, is this really going to be a guy who doesn't work out? And I don't want him to be. I don't want him to be a guy who doesn't work out. But it's hard when, you know, you listen to those stats you just said, Ryan, about the movement on the fastball and it's going in the wrong direction instead of the right direction. And how do you turn it around when you've got the same coaching staff? Like, it's not like anybody's pulling the panic button and being like, okay, you know, this is a huge problem. We need to figure it out. Everybody's just going along like it's no problem. Nobody's getting fired. There's no changes being made. Like, and why are we going to expect the results to be different when nothing's changed?
It's like, just frustrating. Sorry, Nick.
No, go ahead.
But when you, like, yes, it's the first start of the year. A lot of things are at, like, there's a lot of different variables that go to play in it. He was throwing on the 75-degree day. Like, yes, there was a little bit of wind blowing out, but, like, it's not like it was very, very cold that impacts your grip. It's not like it was humid and your hands are going to get a little more clammy and impacts your grip. It was rather perfect conditions, and his fastball came out that bad. And I'm just a little flustered why the focus was on the cutter when it should have been on the sinker this offseason.
Yeah, and that's 100% where I was going to go, and that's, you know, I know you and I were texting about that as well, because I'm like, I know you guys like Gray and all that stuff. I will die on the hill that I'm the highest on Gray, and I have been.
I own his jersey.
Hey, me too. I'm probably going to die on this hill. I'm probably going to get murdered on this hill. Like the way things are going with the Nats and their lack of development and Gray. And I don't even think it's his fault. Like, he was in the perfect situation with the Dodgers, or one of like the three perfect situations for him. And then he gets traded to the worst situation for him. And seeing what's happened to Josiah Gray, and quite honestly, even to a guy like Patrick Corbin, has completely soured me on the idea of taking a pitcher in this draft. And like, I want to just buy pitching for the rest of my life. I never want to have to rely on developing pitching, because I am petrified of what this team cannot do. And that's develop pitching, or just not even develop pitching, but help their pitchers. Like, Zach Eflin was not a guy the Rays needed to develop, but they certainly helped him. And like, there's so many more examples. Austin Voth with the Orioles last year, if you want to, you know, talk about a situation close to home, like that was a huge situation that we were monitoring last year, with the Orioles being able to do what the Nats couldn't, and the baffling Jesse Dougherty story about how the Nats refused to release Austin Voth for so long because they could identify the potential with him. They just couldn't do anything to manifest it, to make it a reality. And he goes to Baltimore and immediately becomes an effective pitcher for him. Like, it's just mind-boggling that they can't figure out one simple thing. Ryan brings this up from time to time too. Gio Gonzalez, when he left the Nats, the Brewers literally moved him to the left side of the rubber, and he became an effective pitcher again. Like, they didn't even change his mechanics at all. They just changed where he set up on the mound. Like, it's not like you need these revelational things to fix these pitchers. They're all major league pitchers. It's just the Nats are not a major league franchise when it comes to like helping their pitchers. We've been spoiled by the generational talents in Max Scherzer and Steven Strasburg, and even to an extent Patrick Corbin. Like, he had his best years elsewhere, not with the Nats. Like, we've been spoiled by that into thinking like the Nats have good pitching. No, they've bought all their pitching, and that's a fine strategy, but like, that's why the rebuild is such a problem, because you're relying solely on your ability to develop, and you can't. But to Josiah Gray's point, and to Ryan's point about the sinker, I didn't realize he had been throwing a sinker. Like, Baseball Savant has him throwing 95 sinkers last year. Granted, it's only like 3.7%. He threw like 2,500 pitches last year, and 95 sinkers is not a huge amount. And then it has him throwing 7 on Saturday, which I didn't realize, but it also has him throwing 17 cutters to 14 four-seam fastballs, which I didn't think was the case either, but maybe it was just because his cutter was not moving at all, so it looked like a four-seam fastball, and we know his fastball is not great. It's just a rough situation, and you could see Gray trying, and that's what's so, like, Amanda, to borrow your word, deflating about the whole situation. You see Gray trying. Like, he knew for a fact his fastball was not good. He had Acuña down 0-2, and he just hung a slider. It was a bad 0-2 pitch, and Acuña made him pay. And then there was another situation where he was like, I think it was to Olsen. He was deathly afraid to throw Olsen a fastball and kept throwing him curveballs, and eventually struck out Olsen. But then later in his outing, he got too reliant on throwing the curveball, and he kept missing. And then it started getting started to get hit really hard because you're just throwing your curveball too much. And if guys know it's coming, they're going to hit it hard. These are major league hitters, and the Braves are obviously a very good team. So like the whole situation is just really deflating because you saw Josiah Gray try to, you know, go to the pitch that's working, and that's what common sense tells you to do. But like, you can only do that for so long, and it just does not feel from a third party perspective or like a fan perspective that he's getting any help whatsoever. And it just sucks. Like it's like the most gut punch thing I didn't think I could experience with the team that I had zero expectations for, because I'm seeing a guy I really enjoy and I really want to succeed fail because the organization is just doing nothing for him.
And I said this last year when we were talking about Gray. It was unfortunate because Gray has the hardest fix in baseball, a bad fastball. A bad fastball is very, very hard to fix. Even the teams that are good at developing struggle with it, but it can be done and it can be fixed. But it just goes back to the same point. It's a perfect shitstorm. He's at the worst place you could possibly be when you have a fatal flaw. Like, this team never really invested in analytics. Team never really invested in player development. The way they scout's kind of behind. You add all that up and you kind of get the mess we're in, and you kind of get a lot of guys who are doing a little bit of disservice given to them, and it's just frustrating.
It really is frustrating. For me, it's one thing to be like, hey, this team doesn't have a lot of good players. And that's just, you know, you just accept that. You're like, hey, they're in a rebuild. They don't have a lot of great players. But when they have players where you're like, I know if that player were in a different spot, they'd be good. Like, if I know if Josiah Gray were on the Rays, he would be a very different guy than he is for the Nats. That is what I have a really hard time with. That is what I find really, really frustrating, is to know that an investment in better coaching and better development and better analytics would make some of these guys that we are like, oh, they didn't work out. Well, they didn't work. And like you were talking about, Nick, some you gave some great examples of guys who just went someplace else and they were better. And it's not because they were a different guy. They were the same guy. It was just that we couldn't get the best out of them. And that is really, really frustrating.
Yeah, because there hasn't been a single, I won't go that far. There hasn't been many, really at all, examples of a guy really struggling elsewhere and then finding a home here. If anything, it's a lightning in a bottle 60-game stretch and then it goes away. But you know, you haven't found the island of misfit toys and then bring him in, and he's like a key foundational piece. Like, I know someone's going to throw Carl Edwards Jr. in my face.
Right. But it's guys who have been developed elsewhere. You don't see young guys come to the Nats and get developed into something good here. What you get are guys like Daniel Murphy is a good example, who was already good and came here and was, you know, he had a great stretch here with the Nats. But those are guys who are already established major leaguers who can maybe come here and figure something. But and guys like, you know, you talk about the kind of talents we've had, like Scherzer didn't need any help. He knew how to pitch. He knew what he was doing.
Same thing with Strasburg. Didn't need development. Generational talent.
Right, exactly. And that is, it's just very frustrating to know that it's one thing to say, hey, we're only going to have our payroll at X dollars for players. But there are so many teams that have done such a better job of investing in the back end staff that's required to really be a juggernaut and have a great player development thing. Like, I'm so jealous of the Dodgers and the Rays and these teams that do such an amazing job of, they just churn out guys like you haven't heard of. They weren't high draft picks. They didn't have high expectations. And then you just, they all of a sudden are like, wow, who's this guy? You never see that with guys. Like, we've had some sure things. I mean, like, anybody, you know, you talk about, oh, they've had some great draft picks. Like, anybody would have drafted Bryce Harper and Steven Strasburg. Like, it's not hard to draft those guys. It's harder to draft guys that have something that you can develop and then being able to actually develop it. And that's what we don't do.
No, not at all.
And here's the other thing. We're going to continue having this conversation about probably every single prospect we have until they completely clean house. And that's the thing people also don't want to admit either, is every single person in this front office and every single person in this coaching staff needs to be gone for there to actually be change. And every year there isn't, this rebuild gets a little bit longer, and people don't want to admit that either.
I think, first of all, love this discussion. Great discussion. Great job, both of you. But I don't want to get too into it. But I was like, at first, okay with Rizzo outlasting Davey, but I think we just need a clean start, fresh start, especially for the sake of our young guys.
Get people who are doing good things on other teams. From the good organizations. Get their guys. Go pay them more than what they're getting paid, and give them an offer that's too good to refuse. You know.
Yeah.
Like, absolutely. I don't know. It's not rocket science. Go get the guys who are good at it.
Yeah, exactly. Not just the guys that have been around forever, and not the retreads either. I'm done with the retreads. Go get someone fresh with no ideas. All right. We're already over an hour, but it was a good conversation. I want to wrap up the ugly segment with, I think, is just as important of an issue and kind of something we were heading towards with that discussion. And that's the coaching. I did want to talk about the runners in scoring position through four games. And the Nats are 2-for-23 with runners in scoring position. That a lot of it is just because the lineup stinks. So if you guys want to touch on that, we can, but I think the coaching has been some of the worst coaching I've seen in recent memory. And I was never high on Davey Martinez to begin with. I thought he was always, quite frankly, a terrible coach. I thought his only good stretch of good coaching came in the 2019 playoffs. And granted, that's when it matters, but you have to have good coaching and good managerial flow and expertise or whatever throughout the regular season to even get to the postseason. And not that that's on the table for us this year or last year or next year or anything like that, but it matters. It matters so much. And through the four games, the Nats have looked undisciplined, unprepared, and just flat out bad, and not because they're without talent. It's just, I think this staff top to bottom is terrible. Davey Martinez has gotten guys that he trusts and that are his friends, but I don't think they're particularly good at their jobs. Like Darnell Coles, for example. I mean, we talked about him like preaching hitting ground balls last year when the shift was still happening. Like, it'd be one thing for him to preach it this year, but to preach it last year when people could shift and, you know, align defensively however they want makes no sense whatsoever, especially in the age of launch angles and elevating the ball. Like, makes no sense. It's like when NFL coaches say, oh, we got to run the ball to win, which isn't wrong, but it's like, it's clearly a run an air raid offense. Like, it's just stupid. So backwards. Jim Hickey, I mean, I could go on for days and days about how terrible of a pitching coach he is. And I think Davey is just a flat out bad manager. There was a situation yesterday. So we're recording this Monday night, Sunday. First inning, Nats have two runners on. Jamer Candelario has a 3-0 count and chases a changeup for strike one. And granted, he ended up walking, but a 3-0 count, swinging at a changeup outside of the zone, not a fastball, a changeup outside of the zone, is just flat out undisciplined. And Jamer's a vet too. You want to set an example for your young players, and especially young players who have a proclivity for chasing pitches. Like, how is that? Like, it just goes to my point. They're so undisciplined right now, and they're young guys. They're going to be undisciplined. It's on the coaching staff to right the ship, and on the vets who you supposedly bring in, like Corey Dickerson, for example, and not to throw stray at Corey Dickerson. It's on them to set the example and help out the young guys. And they're not doing that right now. Like, there was comments. I don't know if it was Jesse Docherty or someone from the Post or Mark Zuckerman, whoever it was, who interviewed or asked the question Davey after the opening day game. And Davey said, oh yeah, they were nervous. I think he was talking about CJ Abrams in this instance. Yeah, they were nervous and I was nervous. And I think we were all just nervous. Why the hell are we nervous? You're like going into your sixth opening day as a manager. You're supposed
to be
like
the
steady hand. We have vets who are like in their 10th opening day. Like, why are we nervous? Like, yeah, I get a guy like CJ Abrams. It's 22-year-old first opening day. I get why he is nervous. Why the hell are you nervous? And why the hell aren't you helping him? Like, it's just these little things in as isolated incidents, not a big deal. Combine them all together, plus the history we have of Davey Martinez with his head scratching decisions. I'm so far done with Davey Martinez. I could not be any more done with him. I think he's a terrible manager. He frankly got lucky with a really stacked roster in 2019, and that World Series has bought him way too much time than he deserves. And it's like, we're just stuck right now. We're stuck, and add in the ownership situation, and I don't think they're going to make any drastic changes until they sell. And it's just, it's stuck right now, and it sucks. But I'll end the rant there and let you guys take over, because again, I know we're going long with this episode, but I am so freaking frustrated. Oh, but I do have to mention the freaking decision to pitch Mason Thompson 3 innings tonight. What is that? Why? Why?
Preach,
why?
Preach.
It makes no sense. Like, Thompson had two phenomenal innings, like phenomenal. I was hyped. Mason Thompson's my guy. He was my pick for reliever of the year. I've been high on Mason Thompson since the trade. The stuff is electric. He had two great innings. He was through two innings clean, six up, six down on 18 pitches. Phenomenal. You're going into the eighth. You have seven other guys to go to, and you decide to go to Mason Thompson for a third. What do you think is going to happen? He ended up getting the first two outs, but then he gave up a solo shot. Granted, the game was out of reach anyways, but that's just poor managerial decision. Why the hell would you need Mason Thompson to go three innings? There is no reason. It's the fourth game of the season.
Right, and now he probably can't pitch for at least 2 days.
Game of the season. There's no reason Mason Thompson needs to throw three innings. None whatsoever. Dumb, dumb, dumb managerial decision. I cannot stand Davey. End rant. Done.
End rant. Well, I'm just going to co-sign that. I don't know that I can add anything more emphatic than yours, but I will say that I don't think we're going to see any coaching changes to speak of. I think the learners are largely checked out. I think until they sell the team, they don't seem to really care, you know, what's going on. They're just going to kind of coast and leave things on autopilot, which to me is the worst possible situation, because we're in this rebuild. We have a bunch of these young guys. They've, you know, our farm system has gone from 30th to 10th. You know, there's some things happening that can be really positive for this team in 2 or 3 years, but you have to have the right people working with those young players, working with those prospects, guiding the team in the right direction. And I don't think that we have those people in place. I think that I'm not as negative on Rizzo as you are, I think, Nick, although I would like to see him. I think it's time for a new, I think it's time for a new voice, a new direction. I mean, you know, Rizzo's been here a real long time. I think that we're in a whole new era of Nats baseball, and they would do well to have a whole new group of coaches, player development, literally just start from scratch. I don't think you're going to, but I think that's what's needed. And my worst fear is that we waste the next maybe season or two while the learners are trying to get this team sold. And then the new owner comes in and makes these changes that ought to be made right now or have already been made in this past off season.
I mean, I don't hide how I feel about any of these people. I think they're all idiots. So I don't really have that much to say. I'm pretty honest about them on Twitter. I just don't get what they do. I really don't. Everything they would do, I would do the opposite of. I don't understand why they started a left fielder in third base. A third fielder in left field today. Don't get that one at all. Especially because every time we talk to someone from MLB Pipeline, their answer is this farm is not where they should be. Baseball Prospectus, if you read what they say about the Nats farm, they say this farm is not where it should be. Baseball America all says it's the same. Why are you starting a 31-year-old who's not a left fielder in left field when you have two guys who can play left field under the age of 30 that, who knows, maybe you could flip? But we won't know because they're starting a 31-year-old who's a third baseman in left field instead. I don't know.
Yeah, that's one of those ones that you just can't, like, why? I mean, why? And they just called Stone Garrett up. Like, why? Why don't you play him? Why did you call him up and not play him? Why are we doing this?
Of course, Vargas got a hit tonight, so he's going to feel vindicated in that decision too.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, it never ends. It never ends.
And when the decisions work out, the process is important, and even if the results are okay, that doesn't mean the process was okay, I guess is where I'll go with that.
Agreed. So That concludes the good, the bad, and the ugly. That was phenomenal discussion. Round of applause, you two. That was great stuff.
Well done,
and,
everyone.
And I hope you all are listening, are still with us through that. Obviously, the majority of the attention was in the ugly segment, but we had some things to get off our chest, so it'll be a little bit more refined next time. But we're going to get into some overreactions. First series of the season in the books, and we have some thoughts. You had some thoughts too. We wanted to hear it, so we're going to react to your overreactions. But before we do that, we're going to pause for, again, hopefully what is a word from our sponsors.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, we're back and we are talking overreactions. We asked you on Twitter for your overreactions after the first series, the first three games of the season, and we got some good ones. The common theme, and I hate to kind of lump them all in because they're all phenomenal. They're all great. But the common theme was Mackenzie Gore. Mackenzie Gore, Cy Young. Mackenzie Gore is going to usurp Gray or everyone else to be the ace. Like, I think I'm scrolling. I see four right now that are Mackenzie Gore, Cy Young. So we'll ask you guys, Mackenzie Gore, Cy Young. We're not going to say he's going to win it, but is he going to get Cy Young votes? Overreaction or good reaction?
Love it.
I love it. It's an overreaction. I don't think he'll get Cy Young votes, but I would love to be wrong.
He'll win one.
I like that. Yeah. I like that. Let's frame it. He will win one.
Win one, maybe yes. I would maybe go that.
I'm saying he will win one.
Yep, I agree. I like that. Next one. Darnell Coles and Jim Hickey both need to be fired.
Amen.
I mean, that's
republish.
That could not be any more of a real reaction, of a realistic reaction. I am all for that.
Swipe right, super like,
tattoo on my forehead.
Subscribe and like and comment.
Patreon account, pay for the subscription.
Poke on Facebook.
Poke on Facebook. Subscribe to Twitter Blue. Like, yeah. Let's second that. Dom Smith revenge season is officially gonna be a blast.
Well, a blast is funny because he hasn't hit home run in about 700 days. This is a reaction. He's a bum.
That's an overreaction. I'm not on the Dom Smith hype train.
I think it's a slight overreaction. I'm actually, granted, he did not look good tonight, but that's more Trevor Williams and not just not being able to like move 2 feet off the mound. But I've actually been pretty impressed with his defense. Maybe the bar is the floor, considering how poorly we've been defensively. And that's actually something I wanted to talk about. We didn't get the chance to. The defense, aside from CJ Abrams and Trevor Williams, has been phenomenal. Candelario has looked great. Garcia's made a couple nice plays after him being not so sure-handed last year defensively in the past couple of seasons. Victor Robles has obviously flashed the leather a couple of times. Lane Thomas has flashed the leather a couple of times. Defenses look good, but I don't think Dom Smith is going to be like a blast to watch, but it's certainly nice to see the value he's added defensively. I do think I would rather see Ruiz consistently hit three or four in front of Smith and not behind Smith, but I don't think he's going to be the worst player on the team. I'll put it that way.
Oh, high praise indeed.
Yeah. Ryan actually kind of mentioned this about the Braves series. Again, this is the first three games of the series. Kyle Finnegan was the Braves' best player. Don't kind of hate that take. Granted, yeah, he only pitched in two of the games, but the Braves didn't look good.
No, the Braves didn't look good, and neither did Finn. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know about the best player, but he definitely didn't have a great series. I'm he's kind of the odds-on favorite to be the closer, so I'm expecting improvement from him. But it was not a great beginning.
Yep,
I agree with it.
Yep, me too. All right, let's get into some K'Bear Ruiz ones. K'Bear Ruiz, a top three catcher in baseball.
That's an overreaction.
Well, if you're a hater.
Sorry. I mean, talk to me in 3 months if he's. I need more sample size. I would like him to be one of the top three catchers.
I'm not going to talk to you in 3 days at this rate. You need to fix your attitude.
I'm a believer.
Absolutely. What, he had the same OPS as Mike Trout?
Hell yeah. Better WRC plus than Mike Trout. Ninth in the league in OPS. I'm a believer. Ride on.
I saw that tweet from you, Ryan. I was like, oh my God, the trolling is getting started early this season. I love it.
Mackenzie Gore pitching to K'Bear Ruiz in the All-Star game is going to be chills. You think they both make the All-Star team?
Ooh, I love that one. I don't know if they will, but I'm going to go with it. I love it.
I don't hate it. Everyone gets a representative.
Everyone gets one.
So we just need someone else to outperform their expectations. And listen, we have a shot, baby.
Yeah. And all we need is, like, you know, a couple of the other catchers to get injured who were going to go, and then maybe Ruiz.
Yeah. Cause NL, you have Will Smith, JT Realmuto. And then I guess Wilson Contreras, although he hasn't been an All-Star. Actually, yeah, he was. He was
Murphy.
An All-Star. Oh, frick. Yeah. Murphy, yeah. All right, the NL's kind of loaded in catch. But so we're a believer.
You need some injuries.
Who has the OPS that K'Bear Ruiz does? Nobody. Not even Mike Trout.
Here on April 3rd, nobody.
CJ Abrams, worst defensive shortstop since Derek Jeter.
I mean, it's... hold on a second. We do not respond to Brian Chandler. Negotiate with Brian Chandler.
You're right. That's my bad. I didn't look at the at. That's my bad. All right, moving on. Robles resurgence is real. Listen.
No.
He had one good game. But we did ask for overreaction, so I guess it qualifies. But let's be real.
So this is obviously an overreaction, and I hope that he can, you know, he's so good defensively. If he can just become, like, passable offensively, I would consider that a resurgence. But I'm going to go with, I agree with this one just because I like to antagonize Nick.
Shut up. Yeah. Victor Robles. No, he's exactly who he has been for the past 4 years. Like, he's just good defensively, but not. Like, that's all I can put. All right, last one. Alex Call solidifies his spot in the lineup over Dickerson when Dickerson gets back, obviously.
No, because Alex Call just lost his job to a third baseman.
It's hard to argue, but that's Davey Martinez logic for you.
I can't top that. I'm just gonna let Ryan have the last word on that.
I'm pretty confident. I don't know if you can bet on this. I'm pretty confident Corey Dickerson does not finish the year with the team, and that's not because he gets traded. I'm pretty sure he gets DFA'd at some point or released, whatever the... I guess it would technically be a release because he doesn't have options. I think he's toast. But, all right. That does it for the overreaction segment. Appreciate you guys sharing your thoughts. I am certainly hoping that your Gore Cy Young campaign reactions are not an overreaction, but certainly just a foreshadowing of what's to come, because he was
exactly proper reaction.
Yeah, and we need more to cheer about for this team. All right, final thing before we wrap up, our one big thing, workshopping in the name a little bit. I want to have a nice clever name for it, but basically final thoughts segment as we wrap up the shows. You guys got anything before we head out?
Yeah, I got something. Kodai Senga's ghost fork pitch is the coolest thing ever. I cannot stop. I pulled it up right now because I knew we were about to do this segment. I can't stop watching the Pitching Ninja video of the slow motion with Gurriel just, like, throwing his bat away while he's trying to hit the pitch. It's spectacular. I'm so sad he's a Met, but that guy is going to be so much fun to watch. And Japanese pitchers in general are fun to watch, and Kodai Senga's long anticipated debut did not disappoint.
No, he was solid, and it just sucks that he's on the Mets, because I would like to root for him at least a little bit. Ryan, you got one big thing?
Yeah, I do. You know, The attendance tonight was 10,700. We can do better. We can hit that.
8,000.
No lines for us for concessions.
7,000, take it or leave it.
Look, I love this for so many reasons. Cheap tickets. I can spread out. And I don't have to wait in line for anything. So everyone stop going to games. So when I go, I have a better time.
Yeah, and you hear that, Allison, stop going so you can host the spaces again.
Yeah, stop accidentally buying tickets supporting this team. All right.
What's yours, Nick?
No, hold on. Over under 2 months before the Nats do some sort of promotion giving out free tickets.
Oh, under.
You think under?
Yeah.
I think it's absolutely in the cards for the season. I'm just trying to figure out how soon it happens.
Oh, they're gonna they get a lot of games with 10,000 or less attendance. It's gonna not be too.
They're gonna try to frame it as like a good thing, like, you know, first 5,000 teachers to show their ID get a free ticket to the ballpark on a Wednesday 1 o'clock game while all the teachers are in school. like that's what they're gonna try to frame it as. I guarantee you, it's going to happen. And I guarantee you people on Twitter are going to eat it up. Like, it's not just a ploy to get more fans into the stands. But yeah, my one big thing is along the same lines, Christian over at District on Deck. Actually, no, sorry. It wasn't Christian. My apologies, Christian. It was Zach over at District on Deck, wrote an article about Nats Park, which Ryan and I have talked about Nats Park, I believe on the pod when we're, you know, talking stadium rankings or anything like that. Nats Park is kind of a dump, and I get people are going to be defensive over their home turf, so to speak. But if you have gone to other stadiums, you quickly realize how poorly Nats Park was designed in the first place. And it certainly has not held up well. And it's crazy to believe that's already 15 years old. And Zach made a great point that the shelf life for MLB stadiums on average is only 30 years. So we're halfway through the expected shelf life of Nats Park. And I just am so glad that the response to that article was overwhelmingly in favor of the opinion that Nats Park is a dump, because it is. And I think, I can't remember who it was. I apologize for not giving credit, but they put it like they hit the nail on the head that the architectural design, or whatever you want to call it, relied too heavily on concrete. And, you know, they thought that it was done so to mirror like the monument effect, like obviously with the concrete and marbled stone, but like it just looked very cheap. And honestly, like it looks more like RFK than anything. RFK was kind of a dump when Nats were playing there too, obviously.
Yeah, but it was our dump.
Yeah, I was going to say RFK was like at the end of its life when the Nats were playing there. But they're just relying too heavily on concrete, and it just gives a cold, stale, unwelcoming appeal to Nats Park. And I cannot wait for hopefully a new stadium, or at least massive, massive renovations.
Yeah, I like can't see a new one. Where would they put it?
That's the thing. I don't know that we're going to get a new one unless we get just like a Jeff Bezos type owner who just wants to like give us all the bells and whistles. Like, we can dream. But I think they just hit it the nail on the head, and I'm happy Zach wrote that article, because a lot of the times you write an article like that, it's not going to be the most popular with this sensitive at times fan base. Most of the time fan base, they like to defend their Nats, which is fine. But I was happy to see that, because like I felt like I was in the minority for that for a while, and now people are starting to see. I think now that the team stinks, it's like the glass is shattered. They're realizing the picture, the image in their mind has been shattered, and they're realizing that the surrounding,
we all took off our fear goggles. That
right, exactly. Like everything's not as great as it cracked up to be. Now that the team's not good, and they're starting to turn a little bit. And obviously, you saw that with the season. So many season ticket holders not renewing their plans, and obviously the second lowest ever recorded attendance at Nats Park tonight.
And there weren't that many people there. I mean, that's the paid attendance, and you know, that's right. A lot of people with season tickets who just aren't actually going at the stadium.
Right. So it was just nice to see, and not that I'm rooting for the I'm not rooting for the downfall of the Nats. They're still my team. I'm not switching, but I'm rooting for the downfall of Nats Park. I need major renovations to that joint, because like it's just not fun.
To start with putting a damn sunshade over the kids' playground area and maybe some televisions large enough for us to actually see the game if we take our kids over there.
What was funny is like we were talking about the park in particular, like you just mentioned aspects to the park and people are like, oh, concession lines need to be shorter. Like, yeah, you're not wrong, but that's like not really a park specific thing, you know, and it just kind of like
and
escalated
that could be
into
in
this.
Myriad ways.
And they're
but
like,
yeah, there are some design flaws for sure.
They're like the prices need to match the on-field production. Again, not wrong, but that's not exactly what we're talking about. So it's just funny how like people just use it as a venting avenue to get out all of their bitching, which we're happy to be that for you, by the way. Bitch to us whenever you want. We're happy to do it.
Yeah, that's what this podcast is for us. It's where we get to vent and do all of our bitching. So
absolutely. Absolutely. So if you want to bitch some more, be sure to follow us on Twitter at Half Street High Heat. Be sure to check out halfstreethighheat.com for all the latest articles. And that's not just national specific either. That's covering the minor leagues, college baseball, and the rest of the MLB as well, with all of our phenomenal writers and Monty leading the way over at halfstreethighheat.com. Be sure to check out Half Street High Heat on YouTube. Trey putting out great content weekly. He had a great series preview for today for his race. He did the series preview against the Braves. He's been killing it with the shorts. So it's not even like he does put out the 25 minute breakdown videos, which are also great, but he's been killing the shorts game too, which is like videos a minute or less that YouTube likes to promote, kind of like the TikTok algorithm sort of approach. Been killing that. Quick videos gives you all the pertinent information. Trey has been killing it over on YouTube. Be sure to subscribe to Half Street High Heat over there. And of course, follow us all on Twitter, Amanda at awhite7877, Ryan at We Are All Shaq, and myself at the Coach Moose. And oh, also check out districtondeck.com as well for all the latest national specific writing over there. We got you covered every which way. So be sure to support us. And again, bitch to us whenever you want. We enjoy it. So we're all in this together. So we might as well, you know, air our grievances out so that way we're not letting them fester, build up inside. Because then
the Festivus,
yeah, because then we just turn into Ryan where we, you know, everyone's a terrorist and nothing will be stopped or stop us until we get world domination. So there can only be one, and we're kind of deferring to Ryan at this point, so he's the only one allowed to do that. So all right, that does it for this episode. We will be back next week covering the Rays series and whatever series is after that. I forget, but I'm not sure at all matters too much with the state of the Nats, but that does it for this episode. We appreciate listening, and in the meantime, let's go Nats.
There's a new breeze blowing off the banks of the Potomac. A new team's mowing down the ranks of their opponents. The Nationals are smashing balls, so that's the commentator who has the calls has passed the wall to see you later. Let's go. By the early light of dawn, well, you can see they're running scared, 'cause the kinds of bombs we're launching are bursting in the air. Tell the Library of Congress that they might not want to look, 'cause we're putting curly W's in every book. Let's go Nats. We've got a game to play.
Let's Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.